This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Upstart. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pass Studios. I am Ryan Sickler. You know me as RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. Thank you guys for all your support, man. The community continues to grow. Please subscribe to the YouTube page. That's a really great way to help the show. There's a lot of free ways to help the show. You know, subscribing to the YouTube page, a five-star review, stuff like that. Don't just watch, subscribe. And the Patreon show, The Honeydew with Y'all, is... it's absolutely one of my favorite things to do is sit and talk to you guys about your life stories. And I'm blown away by the younger crowd that's coming around.
Wait,
and
no,
emailing.
You were saying right before we started how much you hate your patrons. You were like, I have to do this bullshit. I fucking hate it. But okay, I guess you're different on air.
On air, he said. We're on air. Live from the Honeydew Studio.
I mean, it caught me off guard from what you said moments ago.
All right, don't fuck with my income during a pandemic, Brooks. All right. The Patreon show. If you or someone you know has a story that absolutely needs to be heard, please submit it at honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. It's $5 a month. It's $60 a year. And yes, I say it every week. It is a lot of money for some people right now. I know it. It's a utility bill. You're on unemployment, all that. So if you do have the means and you can support, I appreciate you. And giving one back to you, if you sign up for a year, you'll get like a month plus of free episodes. So there's that as well. Facebook fan page, TheHoneydewPodcast.com is a website for everything. The merch is there. I cannot believe the amount of night pants we're selling, y'all. Night Pants Nation is... We outsold the damn pattern at the place that makes the night pants, all right? I can't... It just makes me laugh. It's absurd. Night shorts, you all came up with that idea. You're buying the shit out of those. Thank you very much. The Night Pants Nation sweats, the hoodies, all of it. It's all there. Now, if you live in L.A. or if you need musical instruments or lessons for your kids, you know I record here at Santa Monica Music Center. You can take online classes from L.A. musicians. You just go to SantaMonicaMusic.com. Use the code Honeydew. They're going to waive the registration fee, and they're going to give you one free lesson when you sign up for a package. All right. That's everything going on. Now, if you're new to the show, welcome. Thank you for coming on. If you're not, subscribe to the damn YouTube channel. And what we do over here is we highlight the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. Today's storyteller, very excited to have here. First time this time on the Honeydew. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brooks Whelan, y'all.
Yay, me. That's me. Yeah.
Welcome to the Honeydew,
dude, thanks.
Brooks.
I'm stoked to do it.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah.
I know it's a wild time right now. And I know you've been wanting to do it. I did your podcast, too.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Which I had a great time doing. So before we have some good stuff to talk about, some terribly wonderful stuff, and please promote everything you'd like.
I mean, I just have, I've got a podcast that you did called Entry Level. It's about all the jobs that you had before that you were a professional comedian. And your episode is fucking incredible. You were a full junkyard boy.
Yeah.
You're like a junkyard dog and a junkyard boy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. You go check out Entry Level with Brooks Whelan. I've had... if you like comedy, I've interviewed somebody you really like. Like, it's a huge spectrum.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a great show.
Yeah, it's fun as hell. So that's all I'm doing. And you can check out my stand-up comedy if you just, you know, type my name into the internet.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
You can find it that way.
So I, as always, I ask every guest to go through trauma. You and I have been talking here. Mm-hmm. And you... there's a few things. You mentioned a broken engagement, which resonates with me. But prior to that, you got one of the greatest jobs.
Right. Well, I didn't know how to deal with trauma because, honestly...
I mean, no one does.
Things worked pretty well for
really?
The first 27 years.
Is that right?
Yeah. It just all went according to plan.
Okay.
And then it stopped.
So here's the funny thing. It's not funny, but it is. It's more like it's the reverse for me. The first 30 was like shit, and then it's sort of level. It's leveled off and gotten better. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't like, you know, I just grew up in the woods in Iowa. And I wanted to do stand-up comedy in order to get on Saturday Night Live. And my family, you know, the rural parts of Iowa are, you know, the idea of like, hey, I want to be on TV is shut the fuck up. I'd like to go to the moon. So I was like, okay, I'll go to college. I'll get a biomedical engineering degree.
Really?
Yeah. That's why I went and got a biomedical engineering degree in cardiovascular biomechanics at the University of Iowa. It's really cheap to go in state. I was like, okay, I'm going to use this degree to move to New York or LA to pursue comedy, to get on SNL. And then I did it. And it all happened, and it was
exactly according to plan.
Yes.
So did you use that degree for a job while trying to get SNL? What were you doing with that degree?
I worked at Edwards Life Sciences in...
You're really intelligent, huh?
Yeah, I was making artificial heart valves. Edwards Life Sciences is a great company, top heart valve company in the world.
So can I ask you a question? We had a guest on... Andrew Rose is a comedian, a local LA comedian. He was on the Patreon episode, and he told us about this. He has a pacemaker that has a defibrillator in it.
Yeah.
You know those?
I mean, I super laser focused on heart valves.
Specifically the valves.
And there's three companies that manufacture them. But I mean, like, I'm familiar of, like, your arrhythmia and shit like that. Also,
what made you go into that major? Were you always like fascinated with the heart or the body? Or?
No, it was just like, so I was like, at first I was like, well, comedy seems like, you know, I knew I wanted to do it as a kid, but then I was like, that seems impossible. So I'll be a doctor because that's what you do.
Which also to me seems impossible.
Right. Well, that one is actually more impossible. It's very hard if you're dumb like me or like to party like me. So I was like, okay, I'll get a biomedical engineering is a great pre-med degree. So I was like doing that. But then halfway through my freshman year of college, I tried stand up. I was like, no, I'm going to do this forever. But I was like, I'm just going to finish this degree. So I just picked cardiovascular biomechanics because I was like, oh, I just was interested in the heart and the heart valve. And I wrote this big paper on it. And I was like, okay, this would be an easy way to get a job. So I just did that. It was just kind of like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't know. I want to leave. That's all I want to do. So then I, you know, picked this elective focus area and then applied for these three places, St. Jude, Medtronic, and Edwards, where these are the three heart valve places. They're all out here in Southern California, down in Irvine. And I got one of them. And so I moved to Huntington Beach. And I was like, cool, I'm in LA.
Okay.
No, I wasn't. And then, you know, worked at Edwards Life Sciences for 2 years, doing R&D for this new transcatheter heart valve that's out now. That's fucking incredible. And like,
You're still up on the tech and stuff. They're a great company.
Like, I really respect them. They fired me, and it was one of those firings where it was like, no, yeah, I absolutely. I can't believe it took you this long.
I can't believe I got this far.
Yeah, they were like, we have a guy here to escort you.
I can pay for my vacation, right?
Yeah, they're like, we have someone to escort you out. And I was like, you don't need to. I'm not mad at you. This is nuts.
You're doing the right thing by yourself.
It takes me 2 years at a job before they're like, here's the worst thing that can happen at your job is your boss brings you into their office and they go, walk us through your day. Like, what do you do?
Walk us through your day. Let me go
think about it because I'm going to have to lie a lot.
Anytime I've ever been fired, I've laughed out loud because like, do you need a box for your things? I'm like, no.
I'm not.
I never made this a personal fucking space. I'm there's like, no pictures of my family around here.
I am also not embarrassed.
You have no idea. Rat, how, y'all.
Yeah. I'm high-fiving people. I think I threw out fuck her. So I got booted from there because I was doing comedy so much. You know, I was driving from Irvine to Hollywood every day. That's like 3 hours in traffic.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, so it was. So then I was getting home at like 2 a.m, waking up at 6 to go into work so I could leave by 2, which also you can't do from an engineering job. Just, I'm out. It's like, it's 2, man. You don't get to leave now. I was like, well, I do. And they're like, well, you're fired. So I got fired from there. Still respect that company, though. And then I worked for a small startup at Caltech on intraocular lenses for 2 years. And then the day I was getting demoted from full-time to, he was like, well, also, okay, so everything good starts happening comedy-wise. Like, I go to Montreal, then I go audition for SNL, I meet with Lorne Michaels.
So you came to California first. You came west first,
I spent some time I started in Iowa, and then I would drive to Chicago like every weekend to do stand-up. So I was like 3 years of commuting to Chicago back and forth. So when I moved out here, all my friends were the guys from Chicago, which turned out to be really great comics.
Yeah, and powerhouses.
Yeah, it was kind of like...
No doubt.
Like the Kumails and like Pete Holmes and Colin Canaan's were out here, and I had like done open mics with them in Chicago. So they're like, oh, yeah, I remember this guy from Chicago. But then, so I then I go, and I'm like 26. Yeah, 26, and I thought I got SNL because things had gone so well. And then, so I stopped going to my job because I was like, well, I'm going to go be on SNL. And but I didn't tell my job because I'm like, well, I still don't have any fucking money. So I'm still getting paid. I didn't go in for a week. Sat at home just like, well, I think I'm going to, you know, what am I going to do? You know, and then they released four new hires at SNL and I wasn't one of them. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. So I just walked back into work.
Like you hadn't been gone.
Yeah, no, my boss is like, where have you been?
You weren't calling or telling nothing.
Just collecting a paycheck.
You, you called that a no-call, no-show.
Yeah, so I walked back in and sat down, and he was like, what? Like, what are you doing? I was like, I was working from home. And he's like, you run the lab. You can't work from home. This is, you are in charge of this lab. This is not an at-home project. And he was really nice. I really like him a lot. His name is Charles. He's fucking rad. And he was like very cool to me always. And he was like, look, man, we're just going to have to put you on part-time, you know, because I was leaving a lot to go to New York and Montreal and now touring a little bit. And I was like, I get that. And then at lunch, I got called to, I was going to go write at SNL. They hired me to be a writer. So okay. I was like, hey, Charles, good news for everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, he was really happy for me. It was great. Yeah. So it just like all had gone according to plan, you know, like everything I tried.
So from your audition, your first thing was a writer. Your first job at SNL was a writer.
Yeah. And then I fucking talked Lauren into putting me in the cast, which was not hard. It was like, dude, I got to be in this cast. Fucking, you know, I was just way too confident. I had never failed at anything. And then I did the show and it was like a big failure. It was sucked. And I was like, I want to be an engineer. I can learn how to be an engineer. I was like, oh, I want to do stand-up comic. I can learn how to be a stand-up comic. I was like, oh, now I'm going to be on SNL. I'm going to learn how to be on SNL. And then that was the first time I just couldn't do it.
Like, what was it you couldn't do? Because I know the schedules grew, grueling and
competition. Just had no idea. I didn't know anybody. And I thought, you know, I'm going to show them how good I am by not asking for help and writing all sketches myself. And just by myself, you know, being friends with people, but like only having my name on sketches, which I thought was a good idea. It's not a good idea.
Yeah,
because it's a huge hierarchy there of like, you know, the head writers have been there 10 years. Like their sketches are, if there's like any doubt, like which one's funnier, we're going to go with the person who's senior. So I didn't realize I should be pairing up asking fucking the head writers like, hey, you want to write with me?
Who were the heads when you were there?
It was Brian Tucker, Colin Jost, Seth Meyers. Mm-hmm. Not even necessarily those guys, just other writers, you know, and then I figured that out and it was just tough. It was just a real, like, I cried a lot, man, like, because it was like four times it happened where you work like 90 to 100 hours and then I have this, my sketch that I'm working on that I'm the main guy in that I get to be very funny in. I would always have the final sketch of the night, not always, it's just happened four times. But so I have the final sketch of the night. Incredible. I can't wait. There's so many fucking hurdles to get this far. And it's really funny and I love it and it's crazy and I cannot wait for the world to see it. It's so cool. You know, and I've spent 80 hours in the last 3 days working on this. I don't even know if that's many hours in 3 days. I don't think so. 72? Either way. So I am so excited, so excited, so excited. It's happened four fucking times. Then, like, I'm in my dumb wig or whatever and they come over, they go, hey, we ran long. Your sketch cut. So four times, I'm like, adrenaline, can't wait to do live SNL. My only time I'm going to be on the show. Like, I'm like, I don't care. It's my sketch. I'm funny in it. I never give a fuck about playing the janitor or whatever who would just walk through. I always thought that she was lame, even though that's what you need to do. And so then I would just be like, what the fuck? Like, it was just a big gut punch. And that was really hard.
All right. So let's go back to, obviously, elation of getting the writing gig. Mm-hmm. You come in. Now you've talked them into putting you in the cast, which wasn't the original plan. And
well,
you've got At least you talked them into giving you the chance to be part of it.
Yeah,
right?
The original plan, Lauren told me, because, and he was right. I was wrong. He was like, you're very green. You're too green. I'd never been on TV. I'd never done stand-up on TV.
Oh, this was your first television credit, too? Yeah. Okay.
So
there was never any, like, Comedy Central stand-up?
I did, like, Adam Devine's house party, but it hadn't aired yet, you know? And that's very different.
So what year is this, by the way?
2013. And he was just like, you're very green.
And how old were you?
20. Oh, this is also a sign. I got called to be a writer on my 27th birthday. And they called, they're like, hey, you're going to be on SNL. You know, hey, you're going to come. We don't know what you're going to do here yet, but at least you're going to be a writer. I go, the least? That's the fucking greatest job I've ever heard of. And then I was like, it's my birthday. And that's what I told this woman who hired me. And this is just foreshadowing. She goes, I don't care. He's like, I don't care. Just get to New York. I was like, oh, okay. That's maybe a little sign that they're a little mean there. Not like, cool.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. All right. Okay, well, it's pretty.
Oh, that is great.
So either way, I go there. And then Lauren told me, he's like, hey, you're too green to be on the show this year. We're going to have you write this year, and we're going to put you in the cast next year. Which I was like, dude, I'm ready right now. Looking back, that was a great plan. Because it is a very scary, intimidating show. The first time you ever see it, you're on it in the cold open. It's just fucking terrifying. And I was like, oh, if I was here for a year making friends and, you know, it helps a lot if you go from writer to cast because the writers like you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're already ingratiated, you know. It was just tough. And then, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to get fired or not. Like, I was very much 50-50. It could go either way. And then when it happened, it was like the first ever failure, like giant failure I've ever had. It was fucking very devastating.
What was your first sketch that you actually got on camera?
The first one that I got on was me doing a Weekend Update about my tattoos.
So you like slid in the chair?
Slid in, did a stand-up bit about bad tattoos.
I mean, how great was that?
That's the coolest moment I've ever had in my life.
Okay, real quick, how many shows do they do a season?
24.
Okay, so what show is this that you make it on?
Third.
Wow, okay, so third of the season. Who's the host?
Fuck, I don't even know.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Because I wasn't interacting with the host.
And who are your, is it Tina and Jimmy then?
No, this was Seth.
No, they're gone. Oh, yeah, Seth.
This is just Seth. And it was great. It was the coolest. Because until then, I'd been in some sketches, like, but I hadn't written them, you know? And so this was the first time I was like, okay, I've contributed and changed and put at least some sort of stamp that I was here on this show. And I wrote a thing myself and I did it. And, you know, the whole reason I wanted to do SNL is because Adam Sandler rolled on and was Adam Sandler. I was like, I get to roll on and be me. Yeah. Like, this was the fucking goal in Iowa.
So you came on as Brooks Whelan, not some character.
Right. Yeah. I got to do two of those, which were by far my favorite thing.
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the season started off okay because I did that on the third show, and then on the fourth show I did my only good sketch, which was me and Edward Norton, these critter control guys who get pulled into a wall and murdered by possums. And it's really funny, and I was really like, so by the fourth show I'm like, I fucking got it, like, this is great, I get how this works. And then I was blanked for 10 shows, which is like 4 months.
Blanked meaning sketches, I didn't get any roles.
Like, no funny roles.
No funny.
Didn't get to be funny once for like 10 episodes. That's so long to just be blanked. Yeah. And that, I was spun out. It was really sad. And then I like, got over that. And then the last like 6 episodes, I got like a sketch to dress each time. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm figuring out. Like, the last half of the season's super fun. But then fired and just like really... Really.
How did that go down?
Well, it was wild.
Did Lauren call you in and say, Brooks,
oh, fuck no.
Walk us through your day.
No. He didn't. I would have told him. I'd be like, I'm in there at 8. I'm working. I'm sleeping in Jay Farrell's dressing room because he has no windows.
I hope you didn't talk to my references.
Yeah. No, man. It was just, I was walking with
how's
my.
How's it happen?
Well, I was just walking with my. There's a day you get renewed. Also, the fucking contract is you can't quit for 7 years, but we can fire you every 6 months.
Oh, really? They get you for a minimum of 7, but they can renew
you. You can get out of it. You know, yeah. I mean, there's one thing, and I feel weird talking about it, but I guess I do know because to me, my friends are guys who have done the show 10 years. And I'm like, so I don't really know as much as they know, you know? But I did do it for 1 year, and I know that Lauren is reasonable. If you want out and need out, he will definitely let you out, you know? But the contract is 7. So there's like a date you get renewed on. It was July 15th. And I remember it was like walking with my girlfriend or whatever on Houston on Avenue A. We were in the grocery store. And, you know, just phone rings or whatever. It's my reps. And, you know, and they're like, hey, what's up? And I was like, well, that's not a you're coming back tone. And I go, nothing. Did I get fired? And they go, yeah, no way to say it. Yeah. And I was like, ookie duke, you know, and it was just kind of just like a real, it was a real blur, you know, it was just like, fuck, you know, and then it's kind of, my girlfriend was really nice and we just kind of sat outside. It was this grocery store on A and Houston, like, and yeah, just kind of real blurry, you know, and then just walked home and then tweeted fired from New York at Saturday night. And then, yeah, I tweeted that, yeah. Which my friend Tim Robinson, he called me. He's like, you had that one in the hopper, didn't you? I go, yeah. I thought of that one. I thought of that. I thought that one up in December. But yeah. And then they had the balls to like reach out and they'd be like, look, you weren't fired. You were just not renewed. I go, you're not my boss anymore.
That's yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
We're just not bringing you back as
a firing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then I just, you know, and then it like lit a real fire in my ass to go back to stand up. I'm like, I'm not a fucking sketch comic. I'm a fucking stand up. Because that's the other thing. And I'm sure you get it. Like, I was like, I want to be on SNL. And then when I turned 21, I'm like, I don't need to be on SNL. I just love stand up comedy. And then, so it wasn't like my goal, wasn't trying to get on SNL. I was just trying to be the best stand up comedian in the world, working on my own TV shows and shit. And then by virtue of trying to do that, I got the show. So it's not like I was trying to get on the show. It just like happened, which is fucking wild. Yeah, then it was just really kind of bummed. And then I did, I feel like the biggest mistake I ever made in my life was not moving back to LA right away.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. You stayed there in New York to do stand-up?
Well, just kind of to say, fuck you. I moved my whole life here. Like, you're not, I'm not going to do what at whatever. It was just out of spite. I lived in New York for like another year out of spite. Just,
and why would you say it's the biggest mistake?
Because I was miserable.
Okay.
I didn't, all of my friends, every one of them worked at the show that had fired me. So like when the show's on, they have an on week. I don't have anybody to hang out with, you know? And then one time I went up there to write with them on a writing night. And I was like, I came home and just cried. My girl was like, you cannot go back to that building. I go, yeah, that was a huge mistake. I remember like Bill Hader was hosting and like I was really good friends with like Tim Robinson and Zach Cannon and Michael Che. And when I was sitting in their office, you know, just kind of fucking around. And then Bill Hader came in. I never met him or whatever. And he was like, hey, what's up? And he's really nice. But I could like tell that he saw that I was there. And he was like, isn't he get fired? And he was just, I could tell that he was like, oof, this is not a good idea, buddy.
Really?
Yeah. Well, he wasn't. He didn't say that. But he
you
was like,
felt it.
Yeah. He was like, eh. And he was right. You don't need to go hang out. It was just, they were my only pals in New York that, you know, that I really hung out with all the time. So that was just kind of a fuck up. And then it just made me really kind of bitter towards New York. And I did get way better at stand up because, you know, New York rules for stand up. Yeah. But then I would come out to fucking LA to do shit. And then getting on that plane to go back to New York was so hard. I was like, what am I doing? I love it here. This is where good things happen. And then I finally convinced my ex-girlfriend to move to LA with me. And then we came back here. So. Yeah, just that year in New York was really hard.
That's what I'm saying. I can't, the high of getting a dream show and then being let go and
then
the
being
up and
surrounded
down in between.
By it.
Yeah, and then being surrounded by it after, it's got to be a hell.
Yeah. So that was very unfun. It's like, I kind of just, it's like if you're, it's a huge breakup, but you know, it's like they broke up with me. I didn't break up with them. Only, it's like
they break up with everybody eventually,
right. No,
but I hear you. I know.
It's like if your ex-girlfriend dumped you and then all of your friends hung out with and tweeted about your ex-girlfriend constantly and you're like, she's a bitch.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I did a big unfollow, like really kind of cleared everything. And now I'm like, hey, you know, I watched it this year and I was like, hey, that's fun. You know, I'm like really happy for Beck and Kyle. But I don't need to.
Is this the first year you've watched since
then?
Yeah,
I watched the season premiere. This is the first
one. 7 years.
Yeah, I watched it and didn't like fucked me up like I, you know, like it would have a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was wild. It was just like a wild, but like an exciting year. You know what I mean? Like, thought I was going to be a movie star for like a year. Well, maybe 3 months before I got blanked for 10 weeks.
But. Yeah. But you know what? You have to believe that. You have to believe that. What the fuck are we doing it for if you don't? If you're just going in going, ah, I'm not going to make anything of this, then you're failing already. You right. have to believe mm-hmm. you can do that. You're not delusional to believe it because we've seen it happen so many times. Yeah. I mean, tons of famous comedic actors have come from SNL roots.
Yeah, and also like what I will say that really happened there was my confidence got sucked out. Like the first – 4 episodes were so great because I was like, I'm the fucking man. Like, I fucking am good at comedy. This is great. And then, you know, you get told no so much there that I was like, what am I? Am I bad? Like, it was really just a mind fuck to, you know, to get a job thinking that you're going, thinking you're great. And then them being like, you're not great. And it was just like, oh, but you hired what? You know, it was like a real, it was a real mind fuck. It took a bit to dig out of it.
Let me ask you this. What was your audition that got you? What did you do? Because I've seen a lot of the
straight
auditions.
Straight stand up, man. Because I just wanted to do, yeah. I mean, I got it. It was out here. It was my JFL.
And how old were you?
26. It was okay. My JFL set that Seth Meyers had seen or whatever. He was there and he's like, hey, we should have this guy. And I'd submitted a tape earlier and I'm not good at impressions. And they were like, we actually saw this guy before. He's weird.
Because you tried impressions?
No, I was doing impressions that I could do, okay. Which was like Hitler if he was into troll dolls. You know?
That's the kind of
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I was just like, okay, let's just get out some troll. You know, before we get into my speech, just got to comb the hair. Got the jewel for the belly, but don't let the Jews see the jewel. Yeah. So, and they're used to like, you know, fucking whatever, Vin Diesel. And they're like, this guy's doing Hitler and troll shit?
Yeah.
Jake the Snake, Robert. Like, these are my celebrity impressions. Mm-hmm. And then you got to do characters. So, like, my celebrity impressions were characters. You know, I was like, Jake the Snake. Roberts was a celebrity impression of mine where the government had taken his snakes and he was just lamenting it. He's like,
the government
took my snakes. But he was it was pretty funny stuff. It was at a children's party. He'd been hired to be
Jake
the Snake guy. And he's like, sorry, I don't have the snakes. The government is repossessed the snakes.
Telling the kids.
Yeah.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the other celebrity one I did? I don't even fucking remember. Oh,
so that you
wait, it was Gallagher. Okay. Then it was a combo of Gallagher and Gallagher. Gallagher's claim to fame was he had gotten Jake the Snake back into coke. It was terrible, but they were like, it was weird. And then they saw I could do actual stand up and they're like, okay, maybe this is a combo. And then Lauren came out and I did it at Iowa West and everyone was so nervous and so fucking,
I'm like, out here. You did it.
Yeah. And then in New York, there's a bunch of shit. And then,
three.
Yeah. And then,
first one was here, Iowa West.
Well, actually three, I just count JFL as one. JFL is what they're like, do what you did at JFL out here at Iowa West. And then Iowa West, they're like, after Iowa West, I'd gotten it. I killed so hard. Have you ever been funnier than you really are?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm not that funny.
Or you could say anything and they're laughing. You're like, man, nah.
Dude, yeah, and it only worked because I didn't take the audition serious at all, which I think that's what they did. I walked out or whatever. And like everyone's so tight and their characters are so tight. And the mic broke when I grabbed it. And they were like very adamant. Like, if you do 5 minutes and we cut your mic. We fucking cut it. And there's like 25 people on this showcase. And I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And I walked out and I grabbed the mic. The mic fell apart. Like, it just like, I've never seen a mic fall completely apart. So I like took like a minute and a half putting it back together. And then the first thing I said was, that was a gross misuse of my time. Yeah. And it just like, boom, like, oh, whatever this guy says we're in. And it worked. Yeah. I tricked him. And then when I got there, they're like, oh, we were tricked. You got to get out of here.
For a year, you got
it. Yeah. But, just that everything had gone a little too – when I got it, I remember my best friend from high school, he's like, seems a little too easy. And then he was right. It was just I hadn't really dealt with failure until that. And now I'm a pro at it. I fucking get it now. I know how to handle it.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our sponsor, Upstart. Now – if you have multiple credit cards, you know that tracking multiple balances, due dates, and website logins can be stressful. It can be confusing. I'm going through it right now. I'm having to make stronger passwords, redo everything, and Upstart makes things simple with one monthly payment in one place. Upstart is the fast and easy way to get a personal loan to pay off your debt all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. I know a lot of you out there have used it. That's why they're back. You guys are telling me how great it is. I'm using it. I'm glad you are as well. Upstart finds smarter rates with trusted partners because they assess more than just your credit score. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans from $1,000 to $50,000. You can get approved the same day, and you can receive your funds as fast as one business day. If debt is taking over your life, it is time to get a fresh start with Upstart. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/honeydew. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew. So you said also coming off the heels of losing SNL, you had another situation.
Right. So I convinced this girl to move with me to New York. And she's another reason why we stayed. She's kind of, she was just like, fuck you. I moved to New York. And I was like, okay, I'll stay with you or whatever. And then we go through this intense experience together. You know, she had some other issues or whatever. And it was just like really intense. I've gone to therapy about it. And they called it trauma bonding. You know, like she had a really rough year and I had I loved her very, very, very much, you know. And then we got engaged like after SNL because, you know, I was like, look, we went through fucking hell. Like, this is great. Like, let's get married. And then that went to shit. Like,
really?
A month
How
before
fast?
Our wedding. Pretty, I mean.
How long were you engaged?
Just like 4 months.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So you were going to get married in that quick?
Yeah, you know, we were both the same, just kind of like, let's just do it. We weren't, it wasn't like a big wedding. We're like, we'll just go get fucking married and Josh Tree will come back. You know, like, it was just very, I don't know, like, whatever, hipster bullshit. Just like, we'll just go get married. So, no, we weren't going to have a party or anything. You know, we were going to get married, then have a party. That sort of shit. And then I was too, like, the SNL thing fucked up me thinking I was funny, right? So I went so deep into touring to put out my first album to like as a way to prove I was funny. You know, I needed that. So I toured hard for about a year, you know, like gone every weekend and then doing even solo little music venue tours where I would be gone for a month. And I fucked up, you know, and not cheating wise, but I loved my girlfriend so much, but I was gone so much that she got pissed. And then I found out about some other shit. And then it was just like, I thought everything was great. And in one day, it was just all gone forever. Like, it was just, she's gone. She's gone. And that's like, you know, my wife in my head.
What happened?
You
don't have to get into the specifics, but how did you end it?
I like.
Who called off the engagement? Her?
Well, no.
No.
I guess. I don't fault this girl for like bailing because I was a grouch, you know. I was just like kind of not. I was just always kind of just, you know, like I don't know. I didn't know how to deal with it. I should have gone to therapy. I should have fucking gone to. Well, I had a friend who did 1 year and left, and when he came, I saw him. I was like, go to therapy. Just go right now. Go to therapy. You got to start going to therapy because that really helps.
It does. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of people that don't know it's an option because they don't know anyone in their family that's ever gone. Their circle of friends don't go. So, and also there's still, even I know when I go, especially if the therapists have told me that men just, you know, that machismo bullshit that still we're a small percentage of the people that go to therapy are male. And it's because we're, you know, we're taught not to cry, hold it in, push it down, you know, all that bullshit. But it definitely fucking helps.
Man. I had a therapist fire me.
Did she say, Brooks, walk me through your day?
No. She did not. But she was like,
what do you mean fired you? What did she say?
I was like, I think I'm going to, like, my ex had hit me up. And I was like, I think I'm going to go on a date with her. And my therapist is like, Brooks, if you go on a date with this woman that you have been talking about for a year, I can't help you anymore. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And she's like, I'm done. You're done. You're like, so then she like transferred me to like an addiction specialist. She was like, you're like addicted to this thing or whatever, you know? And then the addiction one was like, I was like, I don't like this. This is, and then I stopped going. So, cause I was fixed.
Fixed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all fixed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm fixed too. Right.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, life was pretty good. And then within a year, like the two things I like really cared about the most were just gone.
Literally back to back, like so close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's almost, I've had a best friend die, and that's way worse. But mentally, easier to deal with than having your best friend, who was my fiance, just gone, but like a few blocks away. Like it was like she's dead, but she's not.
Did you ever see her in the neighborhood and cross paths or run
into
her?
No, nope.
That's good.
Nope. Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, I just was like, it was terrible. And then fucking the worst thing of all time is goddamn Instagram, you know what I mean? With an ex, you like, oof. Like, I would go like 6 months and then I'd be like, well, let's cut ourselves. And then you always hope they're posting, like, I'm sad.
Yeah, yeah, right. They're ruined without you.
I live in a dirt pile. Ah, right.
That's like, what you get.
But yeah, I'm like, you're on an island? Yeah, so it's just dealing with that, like, and I don't think I dealt with it well. You know?
Did you go to therapy after that?
No, I haven't been back, but it's fine. I don't know, but it affected my stand up. I was a bummer on stage, and you know, I used to be like, well, now I feel like I'm back to like being happy and excited and cool and fun on stage. But like for like that year, oof.
I've been there. I mean, excuse me, a few breakups. I was dark.
Mm-hmm.
My physical presence was different.
Like, yeah, I was
you know,
just
doom
slower. And
yeah, doom
you
and
walk,
gloom. Very
like,
well said. You embody it.
You, I would bum out a party.
Yeah,
just by being there. Like, ugh,
oh, this what motherfucker.
What a bummer, dude.
Yeah.
No thanks. So I had to like kind of just reckon with that, and you know, really, like it's so dumb and how true it is, but it's like, oh, time heals. I was just like, no, it won't. I'm going to be sad forever. And now I'm like, what? You were that sad? Dude, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are moments within the moment that you think that there's no way you're getting out of this. That's ever going to get better. It's not. And then you pick yourself up and you move forward. And then you look back and you're like, what the fuck was I thinking?
Yeah.
Because you know why? Life throws more shit at you, and you're like, oh, man, this is some brand new shit that's way worse than the other shit I thought was the worst shit that's ever happened to me.
And you realize you're not sad. There's so much worse things. Like, my best friend is this guy, Kevin Barnett, who you heard of. He's a New York guy.
Yeah, and I never got to know him, but everyone that I know that knew him in our world just loved the dude.
Yes.
He was that one of those guys.
He's, like, the best dude ever. Like, I went to Hawaii with him because I was all bumming, and he was like, let's go to Hawaii. Let's get over this chick, you know? Like, that's the guy. So me and him went to Hawaii and had, like, the best time ever. And it was really fun and great. And then I was dating this new girl. This is not even 2 years ago that this happened. And things were good. Things were awesome.
Can I ask you a quick question? Because there was a night where it was you, me, and Emily LaFord, who books the show for me and works with us and also manages at the Comedy Store. Because I had just lost an engagement. You were seeing someone and just broke up with somebody, and she was just seeing. Do you remember that night? We're all in that little landing in the belly room, and we were all talking. We're like, are we all three like freshly dumped right now for real?
I mean,
was that the engagement?
I don't. It was just such a
No, because that would have been New York.
Well, no, I was out here when the engagement ended, and that's the only person who's I've had two relationships since then, and I stop those.
That would have been 2015.
Yeah, that's exactly when it
that's
was.
That's what I thought.
And we were all.
I'm remembering. It just hit me right now where I'm like, all three of us connected to this show right now, too, were freshly fucking dumped.
Just like, ugh. And
that was the worst energy to be around. People were like, we'll just slide by. Excuse me.
Yes. Oh, I don't want any of this on me, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
So that was her. That was that. You know, that was it. Because I thought, like, SNL, it doesn't get worse than SNL. I was like, this engagement in it doesn't get worse than this. And then Kevin fucking died. I was like,
How did Kevin die?
Kevin died. He had, like, sleep apnea and he had fucking pancreatitis.
Oh, man.
So he died in his sleep in fucking Mexico. It's fucking nuts.
What, he's on vacation?
Yes. I had gone down to Tijuana with my new girlfriend the week before, and I was like, dude, Tijuana rules. It's great. Like, it's cheap. You fucking tacos and mezcal flights, and it's so fun. And then Kevin and his friends went the next week, and he just didn't come back. Like, I was like, you got to go to this taco spot. And it still comes up where I have meltdowns about it. Because it was only last January, 2 Januaries ago.
Who was he with, Brooks?
Like, he was with his high school friends.
And so they wake up in the morning and he's gone.
He's
like,
just
dead.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Mexico.
And then the craziest shit was, like, we have to, like, get his body back from Mexico. And then there's, like, a person, I wasn't doing it, our other friends, Joshua Benowitz and Jermaine Fowler, were, like, really helping his dad get all this stuff. And there's, like, a fucking person whose job it is. They're like, oh, yeah, no, we do the bodies back to the United States. We're like, oh, Jesus, this is a business? So I didn't know how to deal with that at all.
How did you find out? Who?
I was in – dude, it was so bad. Like, it was just the worst. I was in – the joke I had was I was in a Wendy's drive-thru, and it was 7:30 in the morning. I'm in a Wendy's drive-thru at 7:30 in the morning because I'd taken my the girl I dated for a while back to her house. She had to work that day. And so I'm just, like, in Wendy's, like, blah, blah, blah. I got a new girlfriend. Things rock. And then get a call at 7:30 from Nick Turner, who's our other, like, best friend. And I just answer. I'm like, what's up? You know, and he's screaming. He's yelling. He just yells, Kevin Barnett's dead. And I was like, no, he's not. Like, I talked to him yesterday. Like, he's not dead. And he's like, he's dead. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? And he's like, there's no other way to tell you. He's dead. And so then I was like, I'm going to come over to your house. And so we were calling people. So the worst part was, like, hung up and you're just in shock.
And he didn't even tell you how or anything. So you probably got a million things running through your head.
I knew Kevin was I knew he was in Mexico. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Right. You didn't know if he was murdered or
yeah.
what.
Yeah. So I'm like, and he wouldn't even know. He was called by our other friend, Ed Larson. It was just like a friend group calling real quick. And then the weird part was then I just still waited in line and got my Wendy's, you know, because you're just, like, in a fog. And then went over to Nick's and we just called a bunch of people to tell them, you know, just, hey, this happened. Hey, this happened. This happened. You know, like a little let's tell people before it's fucking everywhere. And then the Stand in New York tweeted, like, we will miss you, Kevin. We're like, you fucking psychopaths. Like, some of his family doesn't even know yet. You know, like, we're trying to tell people, like, and then my friend Turner tweeted, Kevin hated the Stand because he did. Yeah. And then it was just, you know, a real just you know what death is like. It's just like waves of, oh, I've been not thinking about that for a minute. And I told you I had a meltdown during election night. This is past, like, election or whatever, when Joe Biden won. I was at our other friend Eric Andre's, and only a lot of people went to, I mean, a lot of people went to Kevin's funeral, but he died in Mexico, but he's from Palm Beach. So we had to go to Florida, and talk about funny, man. Like, so I stayed at this Motel 6 in Florida, and I was, like, broke at this time. I can't be flying to Palm Beach. You know, it was just, like, around, like, I was there, like, 20 hours back. And I stayed at this Motel 6, and it's expensive, but it sucks because it's right on the beach. And I'm wearing a suit, and I go to my friend's funeral, and it's sobbing. And then come back, and I'm in my suit at, like, the Motel 6, like, walking in. And, like, they try to make fun of me. They're like, look at this bitch. He's wearing a suit in a Motel 6. I go, my friend died! Like,
yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. So, but then...
You just had to get it out.
Yeah,
though.
I was like, afraid. Fuck you! Fuck you!
Yeah.
But then I was at Eric Andre's the other day. I was real drunk because Joe Biden won, and it was, like, an amount of stress that had melted off of me because I couldn't have dealt with I just couldn't have dealt with the pandemic, and then also Donald Trump is still president. I just couldn't. It was, the stress was so deep that whole week, because I was like, I don't know. And then that Joe Biden went, I don't even like Joe Biden, but I just hate Donald Trump. And I'm wasted at Eric Andre. It's just so happy and so stoked. And then our other friend came in, who I hadn't seen since Kevin's funeral, Alana Glazer, and she's so nice and great, but I don't run into her that often. And it just like,
oof. Just seeing her did it.
Seeing her drunk. She has like a Bird Luger tattoo, which is Kevin. And I just melted down. I like sobbing. Like everyone's like, what the fuck, you know? And I, yeah, that's when I was like, oh, I got to go to therapy. Like, yeah. So just like hit me. Like I hadn't dealt with it, you know, right. in like a while. And it was a blubbering
mess. Did you leave? Did you stay?
Oh, I stayed. I stayed.
How much longer did you stay?
Till like 3 a.m. It was a terrible decision to stay. Yeah, Eric's really nice. He called me the next day. He's like, you all right? I was like, yeah, I think. Sorry. He's like, it's okay, but...
You scared some people.
Yes, you did. Yes. He's like, you were pretty wild. I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to go to therapy. But yeah, so that... And then I cried about Kevin a few days ago. It's just because, like, this is the time
what
where...
What gets you?
Like, the time where you're like, this is when I would be hanging out with Kevin. You know, this lockdown, I'm like, this is where I would be with Kevin playing video games. You know, like this is where
yeah.
he would be showing me some new music video and it would just be us talking about how fucked everything was. Like that was that he was at, you know. So it's like, oh, the guy that I would be spending the most time with right now is gone during the weirdest time ever. I was talking about how Kevin did it right. He bounced at the right time.
How old was he?
He was 32.
Damn.
We were like a few days apart in age.
So was there ever an autopsy done? It was definitely from the
pancreatitis. Yeah, man. We were, I mean, like.
Did he know he had that?
I don't know. He had sleep apnea. We shared so many hotel rooms and he would just like,
yeah,
you know, like.
Yeah.
So it was like he needed like a sleep apnea machine or something. I don't know. I just know it's pancreatitis and I was really like stoked that it was pancreatitis. You know what I mean? And, it's just
yeah.
like. It doesn't matter. He's dead. But I remember like. Somebody was like, well, was it drugs? I'm like, who gives a fuck? Like, fuck you for even saying that shit. Like, who cares? He's gone. And it wasn't. It's incredible. Which, you know, like, not that he did them, but I'm like, I would have been bummed if it was, you know? Because I was like, oh, damn it. You know, but.
I know what you mean. Because I had a friend who died in a car crash. And I was like, please don't let alcohol come back.
Yeah.
And toxicology. And it didn't. And I was like, you know.
He's still gone.
I don't
gone.
Know why. She's gone.
Yeah.
And. I don't know why, but it does make me feel better that it was tragic and not some foolish fucking
Dude,
mistake.
That's and look, man, yeah, it's like I just want whenever I die, people to be like, well, that's why you don't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why you don't do that.
Let Brooks be a lesson.
Yeah.
Over here.
Look at this, and this is why we don't. Okay? Like that's my whole goal. Just not to be a fucking...
Not to be an example of a fucking dumb death.
Yeah, exactly. That's why people are like, it sucked to go down in a plane crash. I'm like, that's the way to go. Not my fault, baby.
You know what? You just changed my thought on that.
Because
I'm paranoid about that. All I worry about is like, is this guy in good health up there? Mm-hmm. This lady up there fucking paying attention? What the fuck are they doing up there?
Yeah.
But you're right. It's not my fault.
Yeah, I just don't want it to be my fault.
It's not my fault. I'm not responsible. Yep. That's tragic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really good
man,
point.
Man, so much life to live.
Yeah, damn
not
plain.
His fault.
I mean, it's a rare thing. To
yeah.
So how has that changed your view on life? What did it do to you? Other than make you sad, obviously. Does it make you appreciate comedy more, friends more? Did it make you have...
It made me way closer with Kevin's group of friends.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like everybody who was at that funeral, because Kevin was a New York dude and just had lived in LA a few years. And like I was mostly friends with those guys through Kevin because we met when we were 25 hosting Comedy Central had a hot tub time machine thing or whatever. And then me and Kevin... hosted, it was the first thing we ever did on TV. We hosted the interstitials for, you're watching Hot Tub Time Machine, you know. And then we became best friends because we were sitting in this hot tub all day. And it was just like, you know, a perfect way to meet a pal. And then, you know, we go to Montreal together and then everything starts happening together. He makes his show Friends of the People when I get SNL. And like, we're just having fun success together.
Yeah.
And it was great. But I really just mostly hung with Kev. And then through all this, I became way better friends, closer friends with everybody else who has the exact same amount of great things and great stories about Kevin. Because I didn't meet him until we were 25. He'd been, you know, in New York hustling for 5 years before that. But I would just say of anything, I don't even know. I mean, I think I really haven't dealt with it. I've just been like, yeah. And I don't know. It just sucks. I don't see any positivity in it. There's no positivity in it. I can see. You know what I mean? So there's no, like, I learned lessons from, you know, being fired off SNL and an engagement ending of like, oh, you know, you can grow on these. This one, I don't see any growth.
That's where therapy comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, there's no positive about that. That happened because it's nothing. All bad. So, yeah, it just sucks.
But you haven't seen the positive sense of anything?
From Kevin dying, no.
Nothing.
It hasn't
made you change your life in a positive way? I don't mean specifically he died this. I mean,
right.
What has the collateral damage? Have you turned any of that into positivity yet? Is there anything that made you go, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do this, or I'm going to think or whatever.
I always
connect with anyone.
I don't know, man. It was just, I don't think so. I was already doing all that stuff. Like, Kevin was the guy who would go with me on the trips I go on by myself now. Like,
yeah, the camping, solo stuff.
Yeah,
you're doing
so I go solo. Like, Kevin was the dude who would be down. Because, you know, we were all like, hey, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. We all say it. Nobody does it. He was my friend who would come with, you know, or we would go do this. Like, so maybe if anything, it's let me be a lot more okay by myself, I guess. Because, you know, I wasn't camping alone before Kevin passed. And now I do it all the time. And it's like slightly more at peace with myself, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because I just can't imagine anything worse happening. So I'm just like, well, whatever. I'm going to go camp. Might as well go look at some stuff. I don't know. It's a bummer. I can't think of a pot. I'm just like spinning, trying to be like, no, this is. But
no, I hear you. Yeah. No, if you haven't, you haven't. It's still only, you said, a year and a half.
Yeah,
that's not a long time at all. Especially when we're talking about forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the thing I always think about. Like, that person's gone for, you know, doesn't matter how long you fucking live,
right.
Nothing ever again. And it's like brutal. I remember thinking that about my dad when I was 16, like, wait, I don't even ever get to say hi again or a wave down the nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's it couldn't be more permanent.
No, it's wild. I'd met Kevin's brothers and they're cool and they came out to LA and we hung out and that was nice. But like, I already knew him before that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's just like, it's kind of like anytime where I'm with our old group of friends, we just tell Kevin stories all the time, which is, I guess, you know, man, I was telling my friend a Kevin joke yesterday. Like, I was like, man, this guy had this best joke. And it was so funny. Kevin was a big black dude, but had this also just weird, subversive comedy style. And he was so nice and sensitive. He's like, one day I want to wake up early. This is in New York. He's like, put on a suit and get a briefcase and go to Wall Street and go into a busy building and have my briefcase pop open and just have a bunch of photos of dragons that I've drawn fall out. And I go, oh, no, my documents. And it was just like he would tell in a way better way, but just like that was a Kevin joke. Like,
yeah.
You want to take dragon drawings to Wall Street and call them your documents? And, dude, the funniest thing, the hardest I ever laughed, too, was probably Kevin. We were doing Montreal another year, Kevin Hart's LOL or whatever, mm-hmm. and you had to sign this paper that was like, you can't do these jokes again on television. And I was like, whatever, I'm going to. No one's going to chase this. You know what I mean? And Kevin was pissed. He was like, no, I'm just going to bomb. I'm just going to bomb. And it's taped. He's like, I'm just going to bomb. And so he goes out and he starts bombing on purpose. He's like, blah, 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 like not doing anything. And people start like booing him. This isn't Montreal.
Yeah.
Nobody gets booed at Montreal.
No.
They're like, you know, and then he was like, he goes, okay. He tried to stop. He's like, all right, stop. Okay. I was bombing on purpose. Now I'm going to try. Now I'm going to do my real jokes because he didn't like it. He didn't like being booed. And then, so he goes into his real jokes, and they're like, no, boo. And they're still booing. Yeah, and he goes, and then he goes, now y'all just being disrespectful. And it's like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like,
to watch
wait, I'm going
to
get you back, actually. No, I don't like this. This hurts. He goes, this is hurting my feelings. Yeah. And it was so funny. Yeah. He's like, that dude. He's like, I guess that's what it's nice. You get to tell the stories and then you feel good about
that's it. That's it. I mean, that's all you have. That's all we have. What else can you fucking do? There's nothing. You can look at maybe photos, which hurts a lot, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. Someone sent me recently a video of my grandmother who I just... She could still be here. I miss the shit out of that lady. She was like a mom to me, did so much for us. And I heard her voice. And in my head, it sounded a little higher pitched than I remembered. And I thought, God damn, it's been that long since I've heard your voice that I didn't even know. And I started thinking about like my father's voice and anybody. I'm like, I don't know if I really remember. I can hear what I think they sound like, but obviously my memory was not reality, and I was like, man, she sounds different there. Whoa. And I was blown away by that shit. Have you gone back and watched any of his clips or any of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he was also the other annoying part about Kevin was not annoying. He was really busy, but he never did a late night set because he never tried to. He was like busy making the sketch show Friends of the People and busy making Rel's show and being really successful, but he never did like a late night set, but I'll watch like sketches he did, and he's so funny in it. He made a Comedy Central pilot called Kevin versus Josh that with Josh Rabinowitz that Josh sent me, and I watched that only recently, and that was he's fully acting, and it's really funny, and he's being Kevin in it, and it was really it was just it just spins me out for a little bit. It's not fun.
Yeah I know it.
I'm trying to think what else. And here's one other Kevin story that was really good. This is the last night I saw Kevin. We were at some party, like in Hollywood or whatever, and I like mushrooms, and I just took mushrooms by myself. I was just tripping on mushrooms, and I was just enjoying it. And I was standing in the lawn, like, and when I'm on mushrooms and everybody else is just like drinking and partying and stuff. Or at this moment, I was just like, look at these fucking assholes. Like, they need to party and whatever, you know, like bunch of weirdos, you know. And then Kevin came over to me. He's like, what's up, man? I was like, everyone here is being nuts. He goes, no, only you. He goes, you're standing in the lawn alone, buddy. He's like, let's get you around a group of people. Because over there, they're talking about you. Yeah. So he's just, you know, he would look out for me. He's like, hey, man, come on, you got to go.
Yeah, I know. That is somebody you miss. That's a real friend
there. Yeah.
Like, nah.
No, you're being weird. Yeah. You're, to be fair, you're standing alone in the lawn staring at strangers.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Just that stuff. But I guess, really, all I learned was what I really learned, I guess, is to enjoy things when they're good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't enjoy a second of SNL. I should have. It was cool. It was really neat. And I was too busy worrying about getting back versus enjoying it in the moment. So, like, now I kind of try to let myself enjoy things in the moment a little bit. You know, like, I used to be like, oh, hey, you booked to do, like, the half hour or whatever. I'm like, all right, well, how do I get the hour? You know, like, now I would have been like, cool, let's have fun at this half hour.
Yeah, that's great advice, actually. It really is, because... You know, you look back on all these cool things because it doesn't feel – I hear this a lot from like professional athletes when they win a Super Bowl or whatever. They're like, you don't – you're living it. So it's not like – it's when you look back on it where you're like, oh, man, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like that was awesome. It is very hard to be present what you're talking about instead mm-hmm. of – but the hustle mentality is that like – because as soon as that half hour is done and recorded and it airs, the next morning you wake up and that is, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
And if you're not being proactive on what's next, then you're starting from zero right there when you could have a head jump. But you're right. You have to be mentally present and really try to enjoy that shit.
Yeah, just like allowing a pat on the back from yourself every once in a while.
That's right.
And not, because I'm very, like, it could have been better. It could have been better. I could be doing this. I could be doing this. I could be, instead of being like, look, man, you tried real hard and you did all right.
You came from here. You went all the way to SNL. You were only supposed to write, but you got to, you know, it's so much harder to do that for yourself. Other people can do that for you and you can listen and be like, yeah, but it is hard to look in that mirror and go positive instead of negative. It's so easy to go negative.
Oh, man. Nick Kroll has one of my favorite. That guy's so fucking funny.
He is.
One of my favorite jokes I heard. And maybe I shouldn't. Well, it's fine. Basically, he was just talking about, can you imagine looking in the mirror and being like, yep, I like it. Like, he tells it much better, but it was just like, God, it was so funny. It's just such a good joke. He's like, God, that'd be nuts just to look at yourself and like it. Like, I was like, oh, this is so good. He's great.
All right, so this is your first time on the show, so I'm going to ask you a question I ask everybody. Advice you would give to your 16-year-old self, because yours is kind of interesting. Most people have sort of had some trauma around then, and it shapes and affects their way moving forward, but yours didn't really hit until later, you were saying. Yeah, so I'm curious what you would say to yourself.
I mean, I had two really mean older brothers, so it wasn't like the shit was great. They're cool now, but they were not cool. But they're great now. I love them now. I have a joke about it, how it would be weird to go about when I was 8, I promised I would kill them as an adult, but it'd be weird to do it now. Yeah. It would be really weird to be like, hey, Merry Christmas, I got to kill you.
When I was 8, I decided.
I swore to God that my hands weren't big enough at the time, but now they're pretty big. I don't know, man. I don't know how you can. I just, when I'm in relationships, I get too attached, I guess. So I would say, hey, psycho, maybe take a week off before you date new people every once in a while.
That's solid advice. Yeah.
Maybe you do a year with where you learn how to go to bed alone. Not, you know, just like right now I'm living in my apartment alone and it's like nice, but it took me to get to 34 to be able to do that.
And a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, I just said I went from girlfriend to roommates to girlfriend to, you know, then to girlfriend to roommates. And now I'm like, you know, let's fucking chill for a sec. Maybe this is, you know, figure this out. So maybe that's advice I'm just giving me as a 34-year-old.
Oh, it applies. Yeah. Brother.
Hey, psycho. Maybe read a book tonight.
Dude, thank you for coming on and sharing all this stuff.
Yeah, it was good. I hope I didn't over-talk.
No, you're the guest. You're supposed to talk.
Right. I know. I have a podcast where sometimes the guest doesn't talk. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's your turn.
Yeah.
Will you please promote everything again?
Just my podcast, Entry Level. It's good. Ryan's on it. And any comics there's a comic you would like on it. I guarantee
For sure.
Yeah, like Bill Burr did it not that long ago. People seem to think he's funny.
Yeah, a little bit.
I remember he did it and then like hosted SNL the next week. I was like, oh, all right. That's pretty. I guess it's a pretty good get.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Yeah, just listen to that. Check out my stand-up. Watch Friends of the People, Kevin's show.
Yeah.
That's no longer. Nice. It was a True TV thing. If you want to see how funny that dude was. Just that shit.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on, man. And
Time out.
Oh, here we go. Go
ahead. One last thing.
Please.
This is another great Kevin. This ties it all together a little bit. And this is how good of a friend Kevin is. Kevin, one time, he was over at our place in New York a lot, and he saw my ex-fiance or whatever, and she was like, hey, Kevin. And he just goes, nah. That's a buddy.
That's a real friend right there. Yeah. Respectful, but nah. Oh, that shit's great, man.
Good dude.
Yeah, good dude, man. Well, thank you. You're a good dude, too.
Thank you. This was really fun.
This was nice. Thank you
for
sitting down. I got a
little clammy talking
about
some of that
stuff. That's tough stuff to talk about, man.
Yeah, but it's also like so, you know, so like I'm always like, everybody's had it way worse because people have.
But it's cathartic. You were going to say it is. It totally is.
For sure.
Thank you, man. And thank you all, as always, Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.